Now, Shirley, it's a joy to greet you this morning in the name of our Lord Jesus, and I know that many of our folk are missing today. But two or three are gathered together in the name of the Lord, and He is in the midst of us, and we are thankful that you are here, and I'm glad to be here. And somebody said that this is Mother's Day. We've been hearing that this morning, and many of us knew that. It's kind of interesting that in a day in which we live, there can be a Mother's Day and a Father's Day when such gender distinctions are not very much appreciated by many people. And if you would not have a Mother's Day or a Father's Day, and you're in that way of thinking about things, I wonder what name you would give to this day. If she is not your mother and he is not your father. And there are many homes that are like that. And so I believe it's an honor to the God as well as honor to our mothers that we call this Mother's Day and not some other strange name that would be unidentifiable to what God has truly done in bringing children into the world. I one time was preaching in the state of Arizona, and I asked the congregation for the next night to bring to the meeting the next evening who they feel is the greatest man that ever lived apart from Jesus Christ. And so the next evening, several names were given, several names were suggested of people that they thought were great, people like Isaac Newton, people who made a tremendous impact on the world they lived in. King David's name was given. When they were all finished with that, I said, there's one thing that all those men had in common. Each one had a mother. And I had a mother too. But all of us here today have had a mother. Not all mothers have done for their children what they maybe should have done. And maybe some of them did the only thing they knew to do. And you know, when you're young, you don't realize that your mother is who she is. You find that out when you get older, just what your mother was like. I don't remember what my mother was like just a few months before she died at almost 92 years of age. My mother did not live the way I'm going to be teaching this morning. She did not do for her children, at least not for the older ones, what this lesson says this morning. And yet I want to give these thoughts honoring my mother, although she did not do these things. I don't think she knew anything about how to do it. But I want you to know about how to do it. And I realize that every mother that's here this morning is probably very conscious of mistakes that you've made. Those mistakes can all be forgiven. Those mistakes can all be redeemed. Those mistakes can all be taken care of. That's one of the glories, one of the blessings of being a part of the family of God. Many of us as parents have not done as well as we should have done. That is redeemable. That is certainly understandable. But that does not change the truth of God's word, and we teach it the way it's written here, even though some of us did not do it like we should have. Now, there was something I would like to have brought from home. If I had lived in Costa Rica, I could have brought this long for you today here, a little object lesson, but I don't live there anymore, and we don't have our things that we one day had. But my daughter, our little daughter, she had gotten a yo-yo, and she didn't know how to use it, so I tried to teach her how to use the yo-yo, and to teach her to do that, I took her up the steps, and that had her dropped off the side of the steps down so she had more space for it to work, because she was too short to do it on the floor. It would hit the ground when she tried to do it. But when she was standing up on something high, then it could get down there and come back up. But a yo-yo has this unusual feature about it, that it's there it is going away from you, going further and further away from you, and about that time it turns around and starts coming up towards you. And there it goes away, but not comes back up. And the secret of a yo-yo and how to use it is that, yes, you anyone can let it go, and it goes down to the bottom, it stays down there, but to bring it back up. So I'm going to use that for an illustration this morning to talk to our mothers. Because a mother has the unusual ability to not only see her son or her daughter go further and further away from her, get older, go to school, get older, go to work, get older, get married, and go away. But there's something in a mother's heart that when that string gets out to as far as it can go, something strange happens, it reverses, it comes back. It comes back to mama. Went away, came back. There it goes, it comes back. And so, mother, you have a yo-yo there. And you have your hand on the one end of it, very, very firmly. You have it wrapped around your finger. The yo-yo, there it goes. Mother brings it back. Mother brings it back. There are mothers today that would like to bring their yo-yo back, don't know how to get it back. There are children that have made mistakes. There are parents that have made mistakes. There's separation between mama and the child. The yo-yo went away, but did not come back home. I'd like to see that yo-yo come back up so the mother can just open her hand and take it again like that. Comes back up, she goes like that. She has it again. Isn't that a beautiful picture? Quite probably no one has more influence in the life of a person for all of his life than his own mother would have. Yes, in the home, the father has the main responsibility, but the mother that rocks the cradle rules the world. In the Bible, we read of a name that has great significance. That name is a mother in Israel. I'd just like you to think about that phrase, a mother in Israel. There is also this expression in your Bible: the Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah, which two did build the house of Israel. Speaking of Ruth. And even though many in our land today refer to this Sunday as Mother's Day, every day is a holy opportunity for our mothers to build the house of Israel. I'd like to read a text to you this morning from Proverbs chapter 6. You may turn there. I'll be reading verses 20 through 23. So Proverbs 6 verse 20. My son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart, and tie them about thy neck. Yo-yo. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. And when thou awakest, it shall talk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light. And reproofs of instruction are the way of life, to keep thee from the wrong things in life. Keep you from going to the wrong place and staying there. Keeping you from going a way that you should never go. Let's see, is Timothy here this morning? Your son Timothy, is he here somewhere? Let's see, but I don't see his mother. She is not here. Yeah. I just use Lauren and Timothy as a little illustration here. I'd like to talk about this, these few verses that I just read. I want you to notice there, verse 20, you have the word commandment, you have the word law. The word law in our Spanish Bible is the word teaching, where it says the law of thy mother is the teaching or the enseñanza of your mother. Your father gives commandment, but your mother has a law. There's a teaching there that's very important. And in verse 23, it says that that commandment that daddy gives is like a lamp. But the law that comes from mother, the teaching comes from her, is like a light. So here's Timothy with his mother. His father gives directions. His father has established his parameters for the family. The son learns what those things are. But there's a law that comes from his mother. As far as I know, Lauren is not an author. As far as I know, she has never written a book. As far as I know, she has never taken a pencil and written down all that she believes and passed it on to her children. As far as I know, Timothy has never read a book in which his mother wrote down her precepts and wrote down her teachings. But there's no doubt in my mind that Timothy knows the law of his mother. There's no doubt in my mind that Timothy knows what his mother would like of him, would be blessed if he would do. Desires for his life, Timothy knows that. Timothy can go someplace where his mother cannot be seen. She does not see him, does not know where he is. Timothy can be with some friends hidden back someplace in the woods or the bushes or the forest. Timothy could be in town somewhere, rummaging through some materials there for sale on a counter. And mother's nowhere around, but Timothy knows exactly if mother wants him to be doing what he's doing right now or not. Is that true or not, Brother John? Is that true? And this teaching of a mama, though she never has given it to him in this written form, is so written in his heart that any subject that you can think about, any situation you could get into, he would be able to tell you immediately what his mother would want him to do. And the yo-yo is fastened on her finger, and she rolls this thing down, and it gets down there and comes right back up again. In this illustration, this yo-yo is a little bit different. This yo-yo is fastened to mother at one end, and fastened around the neck of her son on the other end. It's like there's a long, long chain that goes out there 5,000 miles. And it's fastened here to mother's heart and goes all the way around, that way out there, as far as son ever gets, Timothy, and it's wrapped around his neck. And he gets out there far, far away and he feels that tug on his neck. And what was that? And mother has no idea what the decision is and what he's doing, what he's up to and what the influences are and what he's about to undertake and what he's planning to do. Mother doesn't know that, but Timothy felt something. And the yo-yo started pulling in the opposite direction. Get that? But Timothy, I'm going to tell you something. And if there's another son sitting here someplace, you can hear it if you want to. But Timothy, if the day ever comes that you violate the law of mama, you disregard it and despise it. That's a sad day for Timothy. And mother's back home in the bedroom and her face is on the pillow and the pillow's wet because she's crying about her son Timothy. But it's going to be sadder for you than it is for your mama. You got a bad life coming up. You have a sad, sad story being written right now. But the son, he makes a glad daddy and mama, that's going to be a blessed boy for the rest of his life. One more thing I wanted you to notice is that the commandment of a father is a lamp. But the law of the mother is the life, is the light. See, the father put the structure there, but the mother put life into that structure. There's a lamp, but someone comes along and puts light in there. That's a Mother's Day sermon, isn't it? The value, the importance, the strategic place that a mother plays in the life of a person. Now, Sister Lizzie, I never remember my mother ever giving me any instruction. in my lifetime. I lived at home for 19 years. I was at home very little that time. From the time I was 11 years old, I started working away from home. So maybe I was only home about 11 or 12 years. But during that time, I don't remember my mother ever sitting down and instructing me about anything or teaching me or taking time with me. I don't ever remember her doing that. But one time, she was kind of upset. She said, "Dale, you are an embarrassment to me. You embarrass me." That's the only such instruction I remember her saying to me. What a thing to remember. You're an embarrassment. And so, Lizzie, you've had 11 children. Susanna Wesley had over 20 children. She had a plan where she spent 1 hour with each child per week. And I'm pretty sure that she had to discipline herself intensely and plan very accurately to be able to take about 20 children and spend 1 hour every week with one child alone. It's 20 hours out of a 40-hour work week. That's a tremendous amount of time to invest in one child. Can you imagine if I would have been one whole hour every week with my mother alone? I cannot even fathom something like that. Amazing things that we can think about when it talks about mothers here. But the commandment provides the structure. But the teaching of mama, the law of mother, provides the life, the light that's in that structure. So we find that yo-yo here. Son goes out there, Timothy goes out there, but he feels that tug. Something brings him back, feels that tug. This is the value that God puts on the teaching of a mother. Perhaps it would be appropriate this morning to explain how this theme this morning came to my attention, why I thought about it. I'm going to tell you how this happened. And maybe this itself will be instructive. What follows now is not going to be verses from the Bible. It's something else that took place at a shop, but you just listen. I had a tool that needed to be repaired. I took it to a shop where I knew the man would be able to fix this. While I was there, out of a clear blue sky, this was not the conversation at all. I have no idea what prompted him to say this, but one of the workers in that shop came up to me and asked this question. Why do your church members have no television set in their homes? Now, this is the strangest thing. Here I am in this shop getting a piece of equipment repaired, and this man walks up to me and says, why don't your church members have a television set in their home? That told me several things. It told me that he knew something about who we were, though I did not know him. As far as I know, we'd never met before. And he had this unusual question. And I could tell by the way he asked the question that this was not a cynical question. This was not a challenging question. This was not a fault-finding question. I could tell by the tone of his voice that he wanted a sincere answer to the question. Why don't you have a television in your home? Why don't you have one in your home, Joseph? No TV set over there in Nobleville, in your home. So how would you answer that question? No one had been talking about TV. So I did like Brother Mo said he did this week when he was sitting in the back there with that man, 80-some years of age, with prostate cancer, and he sought for words. How shall I answer him? That's what I did. So this is what I said. Life is a battle for the mind. Television, along with computers and phone screens, are a means to control what people think, and especially to control what children think. That's certainly true, the mechanic said. And then he said these words, What one thinks is what one does. That's what he said. Citing almost directly from Proverbs 23:7, where it tells us that as the heart is, that's what we're like. Any godly mother is concerned for the effect that social media and movies and music has on her children. Just what are my children thinking? You can imagine Lauren asking that question about Joshua, Jeremy, and Timothy. What are my children thinking? They're thinking something. The thoughts that are in there came from somewhere, and something motivated those children to think like that. And those thoughts came from somewhere. And how many of those thoughts that the child is thinking right now comes from mother? And that will determine what effect that yo-yo has on the child when they're 5,000 miles away. What are my children thinking? So I said to this mechanic, I said, let's just consider two different homes. I'd like to compare two different households for you. I said, in this one house, there's a TV in the living room, and probably in many of the other rooms of the house as well. And certainly the smartphone goes along to every room where people travel. And the children are watching and listening, and someone from afar is controlling what they are thinking. And there's an enemy that's in charge of this. There's someone who wants this child's mind, wants this child's heart, wants this child's direction. And he knows that there's a mother here with influence and authority and power over the life of her child, but he wants to destroy that. He's going to put something between that child and his mother or her mother. And so there's satanic power here. There's evil. There's darkness. There's princes. There's a prince of the power of the air. There's a spirit that works in the children of disobedience. There's mothers, you're in competition with strong forces, with a strong power. You're in competition with someone who wants the life and attention and heart and thinking of your child. And so in many of these homes, this is what you have. We had in our congregation a young family. The wife of this home came from a family of prostitutes. This young man had no godly training in life whatsoever. And they become converted, become part of our congregation. And this dear mother had a sister who was involved in this evil trafficking in the business that she was in. She had a small daughter, about 3 years old, 4 years old. And every morning she would take that child, that four-year-old child, sit her in the living room on the couch, turn the TV set on, fill that couch with snack foods and snack drinks. And that child would sit there from 8 to 10 hours until she came home at the end of the day. And she watched that TV set all day long. And something happened with the mother that was not able to take care of the child. And so this child was given to this young family who had just become members of our congregation, newly converted. And this little girl now comes to their home to live for a while. And she walked in the door to their house. This little girl, this is about 4 years old, stands about this tall. She came into the house. She looked around and she said, the first thing she said was, "Where is the TV set?" And there was no TV in there. And she had no idea how to live. She had no idea what she was going to do, because all day long we sit there and watch that. And there's no TV. Where is the TV in your house? Let me tell you what happened. It was a beautiful story in all the world. That little girl lived without a TV. There was none. She learned something. She learned that daddy is in the house and mama is in the house. This family lived right beside our house. We lived here. They lived, there was a little pasture between, but right there, the next house, that's where they lived. And they often came up to our place. This little girl would come along up to visit us, and she'd come sit in my lap. That little girl would sit in my lap, and squeezed back in as tight as she could get and sit there for 20 minutes without moving, without saying a word, without wanting to get up and play, without wanting to pick up a toy, without wanting to be with anybody else. Sit there. Happy, content, secure. She found something she never found in life. Are you listening, mamas? Daddies, are you listening? This is the way our world is raised. It's all they know. If they had a chance to find something else out, they'd love it, but they don't have it. One evening around that time, we had a special activity like you had a Sunday night out here. It was an event very similar to that. There were some folding chairs sitting up. I was sitting in one. The little girl was sitting in my lap. I had to stand up to make an announcement about something. So I put the little girl down on her feet in front of me. And as I was standing there talking, she was pushing back like this, pushing into me as hard as she could push, and stood there, pushing in like that. Until I was done and sat down again. A child was robbed of a tremendous gift that she should have had. So I'm talking about that one home with that TV set in there and those other screens that control the mind of children. But I want to take you, I was talking to this mechanic. Remember, this is a story. I was talking to this mechanic. I take him to another home. I said, I want to walk you into another house. In another home, there is no television. And the other screens are carefully monitored by the concerned heart of a discerning mother. But let us see what she is doing. There is mother sitting in the living room with her children, reading them a story. A story with a noble and a biblical value. The children of these two homes will not turn out the same, I told that man. They're being taught to think about life in two distinct ways. I understand this very well, said the technician in the repair shop. So which one is my home, and which one do I want to be like in your home? Are my children and grandchildren influenced by the law of the culture or by the law of their mother? And this teaching is not an accident, but is the result of a purpose, of a plan, of a determination. For a godly mother knows she's involved in a warfare with a host of darkness. She is intentional about teaching her children. That's a very, very important point. I'm going to take a little time this morning. It's not going to take real long, but I'm going to take just a little time and show you some Bible examples of what I'm talking about. Mothers who sensed the urgency to reach the minds of their children and what they did about it. At a time, some of these mothers had only a very small window of time in which to influence their children and get that yo-yo well connected. But the mothers I'm going to refer to this morning all accomplished that. Jochebed was the wife of Amram. She was the mother of Moses. We read of her faith in your Bibles there in Hebrews chapter 11. And among those heroes of faith, she is listed there. This is Hebrews 11. I'm going to read to you verse 23. It says, by faith Moses, and this is not Moses' faith. You will soon find out this is not talking about Moses at all. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents. And that was not his faith. That was his parents' faith or his mother's. Because they saw he was a proper child and were not afraid of the king's commandment. And so this faith that she had, Jochebed, explains the ingenious plan by which she sought to save the life of her son. This Moses was not only in an ark among the bulrushes, he was being rocked in a cradle of faith. The faith of his mother. Here the battle was very pronounced. A king had said, kill those boys. And mother was determined to save that son. She had but little time to put true light into Moses' lamp. But she had the grace to teach her son four notable truths. I'd like you mothers to pay attention to what I'm going to say. What did Jochebed teach Moses in the very short time she had until he had to go up to Pharaoh's daughter's house, where there were plenty of TV sets and smartphones and tablets and computer screens? There were plenty of them when Moses got there. Plenty of those things were up there. She taught Moses who the only true God was. It's an amazing thing how she got that done. She taught Moses who the people of God were and how to recognize them. She taught Moses how you know when God is speaking to you. And she taught Moses what God's plan was for his kingdom people. And I'd like to read that to you in Hebrews 11, verses 24 through 27. You'll find there's 4 points in these verses. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. How did Jochebed ever get all that taught to a little boy in so short a time? A TV set did not teach Moses. Are you listening, mothers, this morning? And there's a whole sermon here in those verses I just read. We obviously are not going to spend more time here, but I want to take you down to Hannah, the mother of Samuel. Another mother with very limited time to instill her law into her son, to put a light into his lamp. She is also a hero of faith. She asked this child from God, and then she lent him unto the Lord. You get a little index, a little window into how this lady operated. Not only when you hear the prayer that Eli misinterpreted, thinking she was drunk, he was so far wrong. But we see a little bit of how this lady functioned when we get to 1 Samuel chapter 1 and read verse 23. Because this yearly feast now comes up, and she's going to stay home here and take care of her son until he is weaned. And Elkanah, her husband, said unto her, verse 23, do what seemeth thee good, tarry until thou have weaned him. Only the Lord establishes his word. So the woman abode and gave her son suck until she weaned him. And during that time, she spoke to him. During that time, she taught him. During that time, Samuel was under her influence. She was a worshiper of the high God. And she prepared her son and provided for him. In chapter 2, verse 19, it tells you some of how she did that. Moreover, his mother made him a little coat and brought it to him from year to year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. She kept in touch with this son of hers, strengthened the connection with that yo-yo a bit, I suppose. This woman did an outstanding job. I have a question for you. Listen closely, mamas. I have wondered just why Samuel did not succeed with his two sons like his mother had done so very well with him. What was wrong? Where did this thing go wrong? Samuel's two sons did not even follow him in the faith. I can only think of one reason. I can only think of one answer to that question. Where did this thing go wrong in Samuel's home? Samuel was taught so very, very well, and his sons went so very, very wrong. I can think of only one reason. The Bible never mentions the mother of Samuel's children. Never refers to Samuel's wife. It seems there was no mother in Israel for those two boys. And where are you, Mama, this morning? Our children need a mama. A mother who has purposeful time, a mother who plans to do it, a mother who purposed, a mother who's not haphazard. I think of Eunice, the unfeigned faith of a mother that deeply affected her son. I'm going to read this to you again from the Bible. This is 2 Timothy chapter 1. We won't spend much time here, but I'll read verse 5. When I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois and thy mother Eunice, or Eunice, and I am persuaded that in thee also. Look at chapter 3, verses 14 and 15. But continue thou, Paul speaking to Timothy, in the things which thou hast learned that has been assured of, knowing of whom thou hast learned them. You learned them from grandma. You learned them from mama. And that from a child thou hast known the holy scriptures, which are able to make thee wise unto salvation through the faith which is in Christ Jesus. These two ladies, grandma and mama, took time to teach this boy. This boy, Timothy. And this teaching of a faithful mother affected the course of history. I'm going to read this to you. In Acts chapter 16, verses 1 through 3. Then came he that spoke to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timotheus, the son of a certain woman, which was a Jewish and believed, but his father was a Greek, which was well reported of by the brethren that were in Lystra and Iconium. Him would Paul have to go forth with him, and took and circumcised him because of the Jews which were in those quarters, for they knew all that his father was a Greek. This lady did not even have the help of her husband to raise this boy. And so it is with all our mothers present here today. You have no idea what effect your children will have on history. The history of your home, the history of this church, the history of this community. You have no idea what your children will amount to. You do not know that. But invest yourself into your children. Put your law into your children. Make sure that yo-yo is fastened. Make sure that chain is around the neck. Make sure they feel that. When they get far away, they feel that tug of that. How does a mother give her law? How does a mother give her teaching to her children? Well, I'm sure you realize that it's not just the teaching. It's not just reading the story to the child. It's not just sitting some on the lap and have some of them on the couch around you and some looking over the chair from behind you over your shoulder so they can see the pictures in the book. It's not only the time you spend doing that. It's not only the questions you ask them when you're done reading. It's not only the few comments that you add to the story as you've read it to them. It's not only what you put into that moment of gathered together there with that story time. As important as that is. But it begins with a mother's sense of urgency to do it. Her plan to get it done. The holy purpose for which she's doing it. Along with the faith that enables her to reach this goal. I must do this for my children. If mother sees very little importance. If mother has very little conviction. If she is not moved by fear nor by faith. There's very little going to happen. There was a lady. He was one day a member of this church. Unfortunately, I heard her say this with my own ears. She said, are you listening, mothers? Do I have your attention? She said, if my son marries someone someday that doesn't wear a veiling, that won't matter to me. You know, as long as she's a Christian, that'll be okay. Would any of you like to venture a guess as to how that young man turned out? With no more conviction than that, with no more determination, with no more purpose, None of the children in that family wear any veilings, and now the mother doesn't anymore either. The yo-yo doesn't do any good because the string was torn long ago. You see, mothers, that unfeigned faith was in Timothy. It was first in grandma, then it was in mother, before it was in the son. But if it's not in me, it won't be in them. Regardless of how much time I spend reading the story, I might as well read Dr. Seuss. I might as well be just reading Black Beauty. Or reading Mary Had a Little Lamb. The result will be the same. His mother investing herself into her children? Or is she satisfied to let Google and Siri do it? Do your children come to you and say, "Mama, read me a story"? Now, I thought about doing this. We're not going to do it this morning. I thought of doing this. I thought of setting some chairs up here. I thought of asking a mother to confront you with two or three of her children and sit down here and read a story to her children so that all of us can just watch her do that, see her do that. And let her show them the pictures in the storybook and let her ask them a few questions when they're finished and then let her bow her head and pray for those children before she sends them off to play or send them to their nap or gives them a cookie and some milk for their snack and listen to her as she bows her head and prays for those children. Don't you think your children deserve to have a mother like that? Don't you think it'll make a difference? Not only in the life of your child, but in the life of many other people that your child will someday touch, influence, and help. What is the content in the books your child are reading? In the music that they are hearing? In the videos that they are watching? What effect will this have on how your children think? You see, we don't raise children for God or for the church by simply avoiding the TV, by simply not attending a public school, by simply not listening to Babylonian music, by simply not wearing a miniskirt. That doesn't get it. And mother told me this week, are you listening, mamas? And mother told me this week that her 4-year-old daughter is about to begin ballet classes. Can you imagine taking your little 4-year-old daughter, putting her in that scanty little ballet dancer's outfit? Preparing her for what in life? Preparing her for what? And there's your daughter sitting beside you. There's that Rachel sitting on her front bench. No one ever heard Lizzie Gingrich say that 4-year-old Rachel is about ready to start ballet dances, ballet classes. This is not an accident, my dear people, this morning. This is not an accident. Where our children are in life, where they're going in life, and how they get there, it's not an accident. We all make mistakes. I realize that. No one more than myself. We must be purposeful about instilling the knowledge of the true God into our children. We have to have some kind of a plan, some kind of a purpose, some kind of a desire. We're going to get this done. Mamas, we got to get this done. The law of mama must get into these children. That yo-yo will never work, though. They'll never feel it at the other end. I've had a lot of experiences with mothers. I can tell you a lot of stories. I'm going to tell you one more. This is a very precious story. It's not easy to tell it. First year I was teaching school, I had 36 students in the classroom. We found out that in that classroom, one of the mothers was diagnosed with cancer. The school year was well coming to a close, and we took the school children to her home to sing for her when she was lying in that bed. And when we got there, some ministers from her congregation were present, and they were doing an anointing service for her, so we had to wait till they were finished before we could sing. That mother had a tremendous recovery. Evidently, that cancer went into remission. A year later, she was stronger than she was for a long time. I went to visit after school one day. They had a dairy farm. They milked the cows. They carried the buckets of milk to the milk room where they dumped it into the cans. I think it was cans or a tank at that time. This was over 50 years ago. And there was the mother helping with this. That mother had an interesting little way of teaching her children. We did a lot of memory work back in those days in school, and the children would have there on the shelf in the milk, the cows, they had the Bible open there, and when the children would take their buckets back and forth, they would stop and they'd bring the empty bucket back and look at that Bible and work in the next verse a while, and that's how they memorized the verses while they did the milking. You talk about a mother with purpose. You talk about a mother with a heart. You talk about a mama. This was no accident, but this happened. And then the new year, school year started, and into that year, mother started going down again with sickness. 3 weeks before she died, this dear sister wrote me a letter. I never received a letter like that before, nor since. The mother was on the bed when she was writing. She was not a student. She would not have had good handwriting if she was sitting at a desk with the best pen ever made. She was probably writing upside down in her bed trying to write this note to me. Brother Dale, thank you for teaching my children. I should have helped them more in their classwork than what I did. But I am very tired. I didn't do for my children what I wish I could have done for them, but I'm leaving them with you. I know that you will take care of my children. And then she signed her name. And 3 weeks later, I was at her funeral. Short window. A little bit of time. Mama with her children. Short time. But what a holy opportunity. Can you think, Mother, of anything more important to do than what we're hearing about today? You girls are about to get married. You fellows are looking for wives. Find one like that. Look for one like that. I just pray that this would remain in our hearts for a while. God bless you.
bless you, Brother Dale, for sharing those thoughts with us here this morning. And giving us those word pictures that'll stick with us a while, that yo-yo, noose around the neck. I think all of us young men have probably been at that place where we felt that tug of our mother's law. I was wondering while Brother Dale was sharing, this is a thought I was asked wondering about. You know, I worked with Islamic folks and heathen people who don't know anything about this with a godly mother. They don't understand, what a Christian godly mother. They've not heard anything. They've never been raised in that. And what's a son or daughter supposed to do in a situation like that? You know, some of those questions were going through my mind. And and yet I realized that I think any mother